The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. Joe Morgan passed away today. I have to talk about that a little bit later for those of us that are over the age of 40. For those of you under the age of 40, if you look up Joe Morgan, you'll be like, wow, okay. He had one of the most unique batting stances ever. The Cardinals are going to know later today about Chandler Jones. That is a significant loss. They beat the stinking Jets. So I like what Kyler Murray said after the game. It's like, we're not going to get too excited over this. I mean, you're supposed to roadkill. That's it. And so they did. And now it's Cowboy Week. Cowboy Week is always fun in Arizona because so many of you grew up watching the Cowboys here before the Cardinals came. For those of you that, again, are around 30 or below, they used to just show nothing but the Cowboy games here, from my understanding, because there was no Cardinals, there was no NFL. But once the Cardinals came, that's all changed. So we will focus in on the Cowboys with Danny White, the great Arizona State Sun Devil, the great Westwood Warrior in high school days. He is now doing the color commentary on Compass Radio of Dallas Cowboy games. Actually, he's been doing it for the last 9 years. So we will talk with Danny White. Rich Rod is going to be on the show today. Rich Rodriguez. We always like Rich Rod because he's fun. He's a cool dude. It's hard to hate a guy like Rich Rodriguez when he goes on a rant and loses his mind. And he's decided, because he's not coaching this year, to do a podcast with his daughter. So I want to know how this all works. We will have Danny White at 10:20 and Rich Rodriguez at 10:45. He coached last year at Ole Miss. Did you guys see what Alabama and Ole Miss were doing to one another? Like, there's no defense in the SEC. None. Zero. Zip. So I want to talk to Rich Rodriguez about that. Also his view of U of A and ASU and the Pac-12 South and the need for a commissioner in college football. So a lot to get to with Rich Rodriguez. That comes up again at 10:45. Our opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, I reach right over here. And I have my debit card with Desert Financial Credit Union is where we do business as a company at sports360az.com. We are very comfortable with the people at Desert Financial Credit Union. I get notifications from them on things with my account. I walk into a Desert Financial Credit Union. There's many of them. And I'm always greeted with a very warm, very friendly, very next door-ish feel, right? So I don't know if you guys, when you walk into your financial institutions, if it just feels like, okay, we're here, can we just move on? Where you have people that actually take care of business, they offer you water, they're all masked up, I'm masked up, you go through the drive-through, ATM's conveniently located, Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support. Here now is Eric Sorensen, Senior Executive Vice President of Nothing or Everything. What's new?
What's on your mind? Interesting football weekend.
Yeah.
Pretty sure Texas and Oklahoma are still playing. It was a great game between two heated rivals that are both down this year. But that's okay because that's a must-see game regardless of what the records are. So
I thought the NFL Sunday was, other than the Seahawks game, I know that God created the DVR for a reason. When the Jets play the Cardinals, that is why God created the DVR, so that I could go out and play golf down in Casa Grande, which is what we did, my wife and I. And I told our playing partner I don't want to know anything about the Cardinal game. So I came home and I watched it, had the notebook. It was like, boy, am I glad I went golfing rather than sitting watching this stuff live, because, man, the Jets are just putrid. But this Chandler Jones injury, like, so they overcame Buda Baker. Because he came back and played well yesterday, I thought.
Really well.
And Chandler Jones was not putting up. Remember the whole he's going to break the sack record stuff? He was not doing that early in the season. Didn't mean he wasn't playing well. But we're going to find out later today, and it doesn't sound good. You were in on the Zoom with Cliff after the game, and it was pretty short, right?
Yeah, Cliff basically said he wouldn't confirm what Fox said, but he essentially said, if it's a bicep injury, it's likely season ending.
Yeah.
And I'm sure by the time you and I in the stream show, there will be an update on that. I know Cliff is talking today, and he will most certainly be asked about that and address it. And I look at it, Brad, you know, the numbers might not be eye-popping for Chandler Jones, but he
He's a force.
He impacts the game in so many other ways because they have to slide guys over to double him, which opens up opportunities for linebackers. And he is just one of the most dominant players in the NFL. And that is a huge loss for the Cardinals. Huge.
But Chase Edmonds is a huge gain for them in a different position. Kenyon Drake is kind of, I'm not sure what to make out of Kenyon Drake. I don't know if it's Cliff. I don't know if it's Kenyon Drake seeing these guys getting paid around him. But he's not the same dude that he was last year in running the football for the Cardinals. I feel much better seeing Chase Edmonds out on the field. I know he's smaller. I know he's a different kind of back. And Kenyon is a load. But are you seeing it the same as I am? I feel like Chase Edmonds needs more carries, needs more touches. And in an offense, it's really hard to get.
He's a little bit more versatile, especially in the passing game. And Michael Fabiano told Sandy last week, every time Kenyon Drake goes into a season with expectations, he underachieves. When no one thinks he's going to be anything, he usually overachieves. Yeah. So going into 2020, you know, oh, he's going to be a first-round pick in fantasy, and he's going to put up all these numbers and catch all these passes, and we just haven't seen that. But, man, that DeAndre Hopkins is a good receiver, isn't he?
He's not bad. How do you make that play? And, like, Bill O'Brien.
Which one?
Bill O'Brien's got to be looking at himself now he's in the unemployment line, and he'll show up on some NFL pregame show or some studio show. You know, he'll go park himself and then he'll get hired again. And it's like Dan Quinn got his ticket punched in Atlanta, and already in Seattle today they're talking about bringing him back. So, you know, it's just the cycle of coaches. But God, when you screw up that badly on DeAndre Hopkins for David Johnson and there's money involved, and it's like it's money your way, come on. And you see how well he's played. Now, is it because he's got a chip on his shoulder? Like, I think DeAndre Hopkins, with everything that's gone on, this coming Monday night, he's going to go crazy. If there's ever a time for Monday night football, a guy like DeAndre Hopkins and Kyler Murray in Dallas, and they had 25,000 fans yesterday at the game. It wasn't an empty stadium. And it's the whole, this is me. He feels like a big stage guy.
He is a big stage guy. And the one thing that I keep going back to, Brad, that Kyler Murray talked about way back in the middle of the summer, and I've just noticed it when watching replays, DeAndre Hopkins' hands are so gigantic. Yeah. Like when he catches the ball, it's like he's catching the ball with two catcher's mitts. He wears like size 3XL gloves. And you saw it yesterday on the two deep balls. I mean, he just, once the ball hits his hands, the ball does not ever move. It's like, whoop, catch.
Right, right. Was there too much sports on this weekend?
I didn't see the Sunday night game, and I watched the Cardinal game, and I tried to just kind of do a little bit of other stuff yesterday. So I didn't watch any of the Lakers game last night just because I just knew how that movie was going to end. It's 2020, you know. Guess what? Hey, we have an NFL game tomorrow night on a Tuesday.
Well, I'm getting to the point of, you know, Tampa Bay is playing Houston in the American League Divisional Series in the Championship Series. It's ALCS.
Yep.
That thing's buried. Nobody's watching.
I know.
There can't be anybody watching series.
I know.
I totally forgot that it was on because I've got Lakers, I've got Seattle, I'm going back on my DVR, and I'm thinking, I am not the only one that on a 75-degree Sunday morning said, I'm going to go out and play golf, and I'll just DVR the game. I feel like now more than ever that sports, there's just entirely too much on, and it's great. It's great. I'm not complaining about it, but when there's that crowd out there, and it's usually politically driven crowd that says, well, the ratings aren't what they once were. There's too much on. There's just no way to physically sit. Like, the NHL draft was this weekend. I couldn't tell you what the Coyotes did. Oh, they lost Taylor Hall because, you know, Andrew Bell wrote it on the site. That's it. And Oliver Ekman Larson's agent said, we're going to stay here because it's on the site. But watching it didn't happen. The NBA draft is next week. Like, Nico Mannion is next week, right?
Wow.
And you're just like, whew.
Right?
You know, three U of A players next week, NBA draft, middle of October. Who knew?
When you have overlapping seasons, Brad, usually you have the divided sports fan. So yeah. You're either a baseball fan. You can be a baseball and a football fan, but if there are two great games on, you're probably not going to go back and forth. You're probably just going to say, okay, I'm going to watch postseason baseball and maybe toggle back to the NFL game a little bit. But if you're on the NFL side, it's like oh, there's a baseball game tonight? Oh, yeah, okay, there is.
Yeah, so. Like I got to watch Dodgers tonight, but game two of Tampa Bay Houston is this afternoon at 1. Nobody in Arizona at 1 p.m. is going to be gathered around watching Houston-Tampa Bay in big numbers. I'm sorry. But tonight at 5, I've got Chargers-Saints, and I've got Dodgers-Braves. And the Braves aren't that attractive to me, but I do want to see Dansby Swanson, one of the biggest whiffs on the Diamondbacks organizational front.
Oops.
Yeah. So, all right. I want to talk to you about some high school stuff here after we're done with Danny White. Danny White is next on the Cowboys coming to the Valley. I also want to talk to Danny about Arizona State and his view of Herm Edwards and Ray Anderson. That is next. As promised, let's turn our attention now to the Cowboys and Cardinals on Monday night. Big, big time game for both teams and a lot to get to with the Cowboys. And we bring on the great Cowboy, the great Sun Devil, the great Westwood High School star.
There you go.
That's where you want to start with Danny White.
Eno Junior High School and Edison Elementary School.
Edison. What was the nickname of Edison Elementary? Do you even know?
We didn't have a nickname back then, but Keno, we were the Colts.
The Keno Colts.
Keno Junior High School Colts.
We were 3-3
my freshman year at Keno Junior High School.
So my son swims at Keno Pool, so I've been in your territory. I have been in sacred ground where Danny White threw.
The old stomping grounds.
That's it. Let's get into the Cowboys. Okay, so the Dak Prescott injury, let's start with Sunday. You're in the booth. You're seeing the game. First of all, you're in an empty stadium, which I have to imagine for somebody like yourself is odd. And then you see this star player go down. It could have been anybody, but it happens to be Dak Prescott who goes down. What are your initial thoughts?
Well, first of all, there were actually 25,000 people there. Which seems like a lot after going to the brand new stadium in Los Angeles, going to Seattle where there were no fans. 20,000, 25,000 seems like a lot. But still, it was a very weird atmosphere, and Dak goes down, and immediately you knew it was something bad because of his reaction. He went down, he looked at his leg, and he immediately started waving for the trainers and the doctors. If you can imagine, I've never had something quite that dramatic happen to me where you could actually see. I didn't happen to my collarbone in college, but I couldn't see it, but it was, this was something you could look down and see, and you could see in the video that his foot was twisted the wrong way on his leg. So you knew that at least it was a dislocation. Didn't know if anything was broken or not, but evidently it was. So it was a compound fracture and dislocation. Mm. But yeah, just by the, from the reaction of Dak and the guy that tackled him jumped up and said, I'm sorry, bro. Yeah. So he knew that something bad had happened.
It's kind of like Lawrence Taylor and Joe Theismann, right? As soon as he hit him and broke Joe's leg.
And all you had to do, all you had to do was see Lawrence Taylor's reaction.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, to know that it was something. Yeah.
Yeah. Something. Danny White with us for a couple of minutes. So the loss of Dak Prescott, what does it mean to the Cowboys as a team? Obviously, Andy Dalton did enough to win the game. Andy Dalton has been around. The loss of Dak coming into this game against the Cardinals, Danny?
Well, yeah, we don't know, but what an incredible move, which I said at the time, you get Andy Dalton for $3 million? Are you kidding me? He was the 15th. Rated quarterback last year, starting quarterback for a bad team, gets to come home, gets to take a year off.
Clear his head.
But because you're backing up the most durable quarterback next to Russell Wilson, never missed a game, never missed a practice, built like a fullback or a linebacker. And so he just figures he's going to get a year. His body's going to get to rest a little bit. He's gotten beaten up in Cincinnati, and mm-hmm. now he's going to get a little bit of a break and get to rest up in preparation for the second half of his career, hopefully with a better team. So for Andy, it was a great move. For the Cowboys, it was a great move. Now instead of Cooper Rush, you get who I liked but was completely unproven. You know, you put this – imagine if you're the defensive coordinator and you put this great rush together and you get to the quarterback, you knock him out of the game. Oh, great, we got Cooper Rush. Now, oh, great, we get Andy Dalton. Mm-hmm. Not such a good trade. And Andy came in and looked like – first play is a pass, and it just looked like he had total command. He immediately, within the first two or three plays, changed the play at the line of scrimmage twice. So you know that Andy Dalton has been around and knows what he's doing. The whole team felt it. The whole stadium felt it. And he was instrumental in that comeback, in the Cowboys winning that game. So now he has a week to prepare for the Cardinals. And I think we all agree, based on the Cowboys defense and the Cardinals offense, the Cowboys are going to have to score a lot of points. But anytime you change quarterbacks, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen?
Are they using Zeke enough? I hear from Cowboy fans saying, we got to get Zeke more involved in this offense. Are they using him enough?
Well, you know, going into the game, he was the 14th leading receiver in the league, of all things. You know, that's new territory for Zeke. They've been using him, but more in the passing game than in the running game, because the Cowboys have been behind playing catch up. And, you know, you look at all the numbers that Dak was putting up, that's not necessarily a good thing. You know, he's leading the league in attempts, completions, yardage, and everybody thinks great. But no, it's not, because the Cowboys, starting the middle of the third quarter, the Browns were playing a prevent defense. Middle of the third quarter, they were so far ahead, they went into prevent. So Dak's just dropping it off to his backs and letting them run for 15 yards. And they almost came back and won it. But, you know, in order to use Zeke the way Zeke is used to being used, you have to have a lead, or it has to be a close game. And the Cowboys have not been in that situation. Now, last night, I thought they did use Zeke a lot more and a lot more effectively. And after Dak got hurt, boy, it's like somebody lit a fire under Zeke. Because he started running over people, and yeah.
Danny White with us. Can you stop anybody? That's been the thing. To that end of, can the Cowboys defense against the Cardinal offense, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, do you really believe that that can happen? Because the Cowboy defense, from a distance, you're there, I'm just looking as a fan of the game, they're not stopping many people.
No. And, you know, a big part of it is turnovers. The Cowboys cannot buy a turnover. They're first in the league at turning it over offensively prior to last night. They're last or next to last in the league at getting turnovers, only two. They're nine. They've given up nine, gotten two. So they're a minus seven, which leads the league in turnover ratio. That's a big part of it. Defensively, field position is created and stops are created with at least a couple of turnovers a game. And the Cowboys have not been doing that. And then, boy, the run defense has just been horrible. And I don't know what it is. Maybe they're all just rushing the passer, hoping to get a sack, and not paying any attention to the run. But Cleveland ran it, you know, even without Chubb. You know, Chubb gets hurt, and they still come back with the other guys and just run it right down the Cowboys' throat. So that's been the big – and they keep changing things up. You know, last night Mike Nolan was up in the booth instead of on the field. You know, well, that's just change for the sake of change. That's not going to necessarily help anything. But the Cowboys won, so I guarantee you, you want to guess where Mike Nolan will be this week? In the booth, I guarantee you. Coaches are the most superstitious people in the world.
Danny, a wide view of what Jerry Jones has with this organization. They're in first place today, as you and I talk, in a division that clearly is not strong top to bottom. But where's Jerry Jones at with the organization changing coach from Jason Garrett to where they are now and just where the organization is heading?
Yeah, I think the jury's still out on Mike McCarthy. This will be a great test for him, responding to what's happened to them so far. It's going to be interesting to see how Mike, right off the bat, polar opposite kind of an approach to the game from Jason Garrett. Jason, very conservative, close to the vest, kind of an approach. Mike McCarthy, two fake punts that blew up on him, a two-point conversion that was, I thought, way too early, and that didn't work either. So he's making decisions that are very, very aggressive. And I think it's hurt him a few times. But, you know, all this has to come together. Football, the great thing about the game of football is no one person wins or loses a game. And so, you know, the players have to match the philosophy of the coach, and the assistant coaches have to match. You know, everybody has to be on the same page of how you do things. And that takes time. So other than the Giants, new head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, a second-year quarterback, new left tackle, rookie left tackle, I don't know of anybody that's had more drastic changes. And then with the injuries, I got a list around here somewhere of all the people that were playing for the Cowboys starting last year at this time who are no longer even with the team or on injured reserve. It's like 15 guys. It's unbelievable the turnover, you know, that they've had. So I think you take all that in when you're Jerry Jones and you're trying to evaluate, but he'll wait until the season's over to even start to evaluate Mike McCarthy.
Before I get you out of here, what do you make out of Arizona State? We've not talked in a while, and the job that Herm Edwards is doing and the just change in philosophy to the pro model with Ray Anderson and Herm Edwards.
Yeah, I think it's a good change, and I think Herm's doing a fantastic job. He's a great motivator. But this is a year, you know, every year you look at all the factors, all the things that go into making a successful season, talent, injuries. Now you got to throw COVID into the mix, and the teams that manage COVID and have been able to get some good positive workouts in spite of COVID and are better prepared for the start of the season. First three games of this season are going to determine who's what in the Pac-12. So it's going to happen very quickly, but that's a huge adjustment to make. And it gives everybody in the Pac-12, even Arizona, has a chance.
Come on now.
I hate to say, which
this is coming from you. This is coming from you, of all people.
I said they have a chance, Brad. I didn't say they would win a single game, but I said they have a chance.
I'll let you go off that. It's good seeing you. Stay well.
Thanks, Brad. Great to see you. Take care.
There's Danny White, and we're back with more after this timeout. So Joe Morgan passed away today, and for those of us that grew up watching the Cincinnati Reds and the Big Red Machine like I did, this would be in the late 70s and 80s. Many of you know Joe Morgan as the broadcast partner of Bob Costas, not Joe Morgan, the player. Joe Morgan also was on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball with John Miller. I thought Joe Morgan was really, really good as an analyst. Joe Morgan as a baseball player was a badass. He would sit there at the plate left-handed and pump and pump and pump, and he could do all sorts of things in the field. And when the Big Red Machine was rolling, if you're a Big Red Machine fan, Cincinnati Reds fan, you know the Johnny Bench, George Foster, Tom Seaver, Dave Concepcion, Pete Rose, Johnny Bench, all those guys, Tony Perez, Ken Griffey, Cesar Geronimo, I think I got them all. Joe Morgan was right in the middle of that, and he could do a lot of things, and he passed away today. That's a tough one. That's another tough one. In a year where there's been tough stuff, another one that's tough stuff. We're going to have Rich Rodriguez with us in a couple minutes. Rich Rod, the former U of A football coach, now doing podcasting with his daughter, analyzing college football. It's terrific stuff. He just launched his podcast. We've been going back and forth. He's going to have Mike Leach on. I'm very much looking forward to Rich Rod and Mike Leach, the Pirate, doing their thing. On the college football weekend, Eric, what? So Saturday we both watched Texas and Oklahoma. We saw Spencer Rattler be sent to the bench, and we saw social media erupt that that was the end of Spencer Rattler, which was anything close to true. There's no way that he's not going to continue to play college and play on Sundays. I've seen some stuff out of his dad that's a little concerning when he wants to blame other people rather than his son. So maybe it was a humbling experience for Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley's name has been linked to the Houston Texans. Lincoln Riley's name has been linked to the Atlanta Falcons. So I don't know where this is all going to go, but Spencer Rattler, for where he is at Oklahoma, I think he's going to be just fine. Where are you at on this one?
No, of course he's going to be just fine. I mean, he was the top recruit in the nation. He got his feet wet last year against LSU, played a little bit last year, and he hasn't been perfect. He threw a couple untimely interceptions against had a couple turnovers against Texas, had a bad one late against Iowa State, had a bad one late against Kansas State. But, you know, anyone who says that he's a flash in the pan or he's not going to be as great as everyone thought he was going to be is just foolish.
He's not going to be Kyler Murray, though.
How do we know that?
In my opinion, I don't see him as Kyler Murray.
But like, he's played five games.
Right. So far, you know, everybody just says, well, if you're the quarterback at Oklahoma, it's all going to work out great for you. Well, that's not always true. And I mean, yeah, they've had a good run.
But let's be honest, Brad. I mean, Kyle Allen beat out Kyler Murray at Texas A&M, and Kyler Murray really never got his opportunity to flourish until he got to Oklahoma. So I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid of the social media crowd that just says, oh yeah, you know, he's not gonna be good. Yeah, he's five games into his redshirt freshman year. So yeah, we just kind of have to wait and see.
I thought Urban Meyer was pretty direct though about his lack of height and was on him pretty hard at halftime about, you know, you can't blame the kid. He's just not that tall.
But he's not interception short, but he's not short. He's 6'1". Like I guess.
But the interception he threw was a bad ball. Plain and simple. It was awful.
But he's not 5'10". He's 6'1". So I'm not quite sure why Urban Meyer would say he's short, because he's really not that. He's taller than Baker Mayfield. He's taller than Kyler Murray.
But if Lincoln Riley leaves, next coach comes in, because to me, Mordecai, the backup to Spencer, there was no comparison. Mordecai was just kind of there to keep, you know, just don't screw up and we're going to come back. Like, if they wouldn't have come back to Spencer Rattler, he'd be in the transfer portal today, probably, with that, you know, with the way that situation's been, in my opinion. So, you know, for him to be where he is, it's fine. But if Lincoln Riley leaves, and those people at Oklahoma, you know, you're just another loss away, somewhere along the way, having three losses in Oklahoma, which is completely inexcusable. Those people have lost their minds. Their expectations are delusional. It's like Alabama allowing 40-some-odd points in a game. When was the last time that happened? Or Florida getting lit up like they got lit up. You know, right. I mean, defense in college football is just not happening.
I mean, talk about no defense. LSU has two losses, and they can't stop anyone. So it was weird. I mean, like, Arkansas should have beat Auburn, that odd ending.
Should have beat.
Where the refs, I mean, come on. Like, it's a fumble. Like, it's a backwards lateral, what he did. Just how, you know, did they mess that up?
I sit there and I watch. I've seen a lot of the Big 12. This is why ASU needs to consider getting out of the Pac-12, or why having 9 a.m. starts are great, because you're on all day. Everybody's going to see you play. Everybody's going to see you play. There can be other games on, but you're going to get a big studio analyst crew. You're going to have it all laid out there for you. And I've seen so much of the Big 12 so far. The Big 10 can't be as bad defensively as the Big 12. And I don't know if it's COVID related. I don't know. But the Big Ten, the Big 12 defensively, not good.
Well, I mean, honestly, year in and year out, the Big 12 doesn't necessarily play great defense. And I don't agree with you on the 9 a.m. start times. Because what do people do? What do people do on Saturday, Brad? They watch football. Why can't ASU play at noon against USC? That's still 3 o'clock on the East Coast with a huge audience. You know how many people on the East Coast are watching college football at 3 o'clock? A lot of people. So I'm not really in the camp of, yeah, let's play 9 a.m. kickoff.
That's the first game of the day. Everybody's hungry on the East Coast. They're hungry to watch football. That's a coveted window at 9 a.m. By noon, okay, some people, yeah, I'm going to go out. I got to go run errands. I got to go to Home Depot. I got to go do this. I'm going to go play golf. And I'll come back and I'll watch Miami and Clemson. Which, you know, when Trevor Lawrence got hurt in that game, to me, that one play showed me something about Trevor Lawrence that I hadn't seen. And Trevor Lawrence has got all the covers, and rightly so. And he's going to be the number one pick. And these dopes that say, well, the Jets have Sam Darnold. Why should we throw dirt on him? I'm sorry. Sam Darnold, come on now. Come on. Are you hearing yourself? You're saying you wouldn't take Trevor Lawrence over Sam Darnold? So he gets smoked. And he gets the win, and he starts talking trash to the guy, and he comes back, and he plays. And they rolled Miami in their turnover chain. They just rolled them. That was no game. De'Aaron King got pounded.
I look at it like this in terms of the start time. You know, you and I have been doing this show at 10 a.m. for a number of years.
Yep.
If just one day you said, hey, by the way, we're going to start the show at 5 a.m., I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm going to have my A game and I'm going to be at my best, because my body clock has been telling me over and over and over and over.
Oh, here we go again with body clocks. I'm so tired of body clocks.
Why?
It's like East Coast with the Cardinals and body clocks. The Rams are 7-1 under Sean McVay and 10 a.m. starts. I'm so sick of that excuse. I'm just done.
They're not kids. They're pros. They're not kids. They're pros.
All right.
It's okay. We can agree to disagree.
Where'd you go on Friday night for high school?
I went to Pinnacle Chandler, which turned into a running clock situation before halftime.
Okay. Did you know that Chandler Pinnacle was going to be running clock during warmups? So I'm asking you the eyeball test.
No.
Okay.
No. I thought it would be a 35-14-ish type game, not 64-love.
Yeah.
I mean, Chandler is next level great. They just don't have a glaring weakness. And it was sort of the perfect storm. I think I told you on Friday, like, Pinnacle is talented. They're just really young. Like, their best players are sophomores.
But
so.
do you think Pinnacle can ever become a program like Saguaro, where every year they're just reloading? Pinnacle to me feels like they're that one that's just a little bit below where Chandler and Saguaro and you know, Hamilton went through their dive, but I'll go on that one to the whole hazing scandal, and people just bailed, and now they're back. But do you ever think Pinnacle can be to that point?
I think if J.D. Johnson wouldn't have gotten hurt last year, they probably would have beaten South Point, which would have put them in the Open 8 semis.
Got it. That's fair.
I think that Pinnacle is a destination spot for a lot of players, because the colleges roll through. Do I think they will ever be at the level of Chandler and Saguaro on a consistent year in and year out basis? Probably not.
I think we need a few more high schools to be able to compete with Chandler and Saguaro and Hamilton. We do. You know, Horizon's a nice program. Backyard kids that get overlooked, right? Got a little chip on their shoulder. They made the Open last year. South Point had the perfect storm where they had some local kids that all came together.
No doubt.
But I don't feel like at least that in Arizona high school football that we're any deeper than there's three programs, and there was just two. There's three programs. And then there's all these other programs that are fine and they're nice and they're going to be able to compete in 6A and they're going to be able to compete in 5A and 4A. But there's nobody that's going to win the Open Division outside of Chandler, Hamilton, and Saguaro every year.
And I think unless Chandler beats themselves, like, I just can't. I said it back in March. I can't see them losing to anyone in state. I think Hamilton will push them, but I still think Chandler's top to bottom not just a better team, but not significantly better, but they're just better.
Will we see people up in the Chaparral, Notre Dame Prep, Pinnacle, Horizon area say, and even Saguaro, you know, I need to go down there to go to school rather than go up here? Because I've seen players down here in the Bermuda Triangle, that I call it, that say, you know what, Hamilton and Chandler, I'm not going to get a shot, so I'm going to go to Saguaro. And then we had Mons on, what was it, 2 weeks ago? And he's talking about, you know, we have this smaller enrollment and all this and that compared to the bigger schools. So he's a little Father Flanagan in it. He's going to be just fine. Every year he's going to be just fine. If Daddy Baller wants to shop his kid to Hamilton, Chandler, and Saguaro and figure out which one of those three they're going to take their kid to and transfer him to, those three schools will openly take them. I just would like to see two, three other schools step into that space.
It's going to be tough. Those programs know how to win. Those coaching staffs are really, really good staffs. There's a lot of continuity on those staffs. Those guys have been together for a long time.
Yep.
And, you know, I think, you know, we could see a Horizon this year, a team that is usually good, not great, but puts together a really good season and makes it to the open division. But those teams outside of the three that you mentioned are all just, they're all just playing to make the open. I can't see anyone, whether it be Centennial, Desert Edge, whatever, I can't see any of them just running the table in the open division and win it all.
Because when I went and saw Centennial, and that used to be a program, and for those of you on the West Side, I'm not hating the West Side, it's just a fact. When I saw Centennial Hamilton, within 2 minutes, it's like, well, I'm not going to beat this game long because this is not going to be a game. It's just fact. So, all right, Rich Rod is next. Rich Rodriguez, former U of A coach. Be good to catch up with Rich Rod on the other side. As promised, when I tell you that you have to go out and add yet another podcast, I don't mean that in a negative way towards our next guest, because there's a lot out there. But here's the thing. Rich Rod decided to do a podcast. So it's got to be different, and it's got to have a spin to it, and it's got to be a deep dive. This is not just kind of like, hey, football's kind of fun and all that nonsense. Right. I want to have Rich Rod to jump in here and explain it, the former coach, University of Arizona Wildcats, the Hard Edge Football Podcast. All right, this started with your daughter. Let's get that right out front and how this all came to be.
Yeah, so she graduated a couple years ago, U of A, and basically in the journalism sports world, believe it or not. And then she spent a year working the local TV station here as a producer of a live 4 o'clock show. So here she is, 24 years old, got to produce a show, but it was great experience for her. But she really wants to be involved, and that was all new. She wants to be involved in mostly sports. So I'm like, okay, I got a little bit of time. You know how to handle all this technological stuff. I have no idea what the hell that is. And so let's just do a podcast every week. I got a lot of stories to tell, a lot of coaches, you know, a lot of well-known coaches I can get on, and we'll just have fun for an hour a week. And so it just got started. It's a new venture. I have no idea how the hell to tell people to get on it. I know it's on Spotify, Apple. There's a Twitter, Hard Edge FB, so there's ways to find it, but it's been a lot of fun, and it's going to keep getting bigger and bigger, I think, as we go on.
Hard Edge Podcast with Rich Rodriguez.
Yeah, Hard Edge Football Podcast, and it's going to be – I didn't want it to be, like you said, like your typical, you know, this is who won, this is who lost.
Yeah.
It's going to be a little edgier, you know, kind of more of a coach talking to a bunch of people sitting around at a dinner table or at a bar and kind of giving the truth out there, so to speak. All right, plus, so I rant. I like to rant.
I know you do like to rant. All right, hey, let me see if I lob you up a rant right here. SEC defense over the weekend. You just were part of that conference. It was the worst defensive showing in the history of the SEC, and I'm not making that up. What the heck is going on? Rant on that, Rich Rod.
It's hard to believe because that's what that league is known for, right?
Yeah.
But I think it goes back to everything else that's happened in 2020. It's the COVID. You watch teams on in the SEC and everywhere else, they can't stop anybody because they're out of shape. I think the single most overlooked factor in sports and in football is conditioning. these kids did not are not able to condition in the summer like normal. They didn't have a regular August camp to practice themselves into shape. And all of a sudden, you watch these games, and what is so strikingly obvious, the fundamentals are horrible. People can't get off blocks. They can't tackle. They're not out of position. And that's due to both mental and physical lack of conditioning.
So, I mean, 63-46 for an Alabama football game, that just does not happen ever. And it's Lane Kiffin, and there's all the drama of Nick and Lane and how that's going to all work out. So, on one hand, for a fan, great stuff. But Alabama giving up almost 50?
Well, that is surprising. But the thing that's not a surprise to me is because all those kids at Ole Miss that were making plays, all the running backs, the quarterbacks, receivers, even half their offensive linemen, played for me last year as true freshmen. And so we knew the next couple of years, talent-wise, offensively, they're going to be pretty good. And they play fast. They've got a good scheme, good system going. And Alabama wasn't able to – you know, Alabama gets you because they can rotate guys in. They got a lot of depth. They weren't able to do that. And it was something that would probably never happen again to one of Nick's teams because of everything that – kind of the perfect storm, but it's going on everywhere. It's been shocking.
The Hard Edge Football Podcast with Rich Rodriguez and his daughter. You can find it anywhere, iTunes, Spotify, all those platforms, and inside look at college football. And I'm sure there might be some other things that pop up from time to time. You were in the SEC last year. You've been in the Pac-12. How big a gap is there between these two conferences?
I always ask the question to other friends of mine who have been in other leagues, and you want to compare. And that's, I think that's kind of a fun thing to compare. And what's the difference? And the SEC has that slogan, it just means more. And it really does. I use the phrase that the SEC does not apologize to do whatever it takes to have success in football within the rules. Like sometimes – you think maybe it's not within the rules, but they don't apologize. In other words, they're not worried about if you're going to build, you know, a $10 million locker room, and is the water polo team going to get pissed off? They don't care. They got to win in football.
When you look back at your time at U of A and the Pac-12, where it was, where it is presently, how they've handled COVID, what can we expect here in 2020 out of this conference?
You know, it's you can sit back here and, you know, make a lot of criticisms on Big Ten and Pac-12, but nobody really knew what was going on. So you can't really criticize, you know, decision to delay it. I would have waited. You know, there's no reason to postpone it when they did, because they were going to get new information every day, not just every week. So I think they could have started earlier, and I still wonder why they didn't. Obviously we know why they are playing, because of the money they're going to lose and all that. But I love the Pac-12, but I think they were almost too cautious. But some of it was out of the Pac-12's hands. You look at what's going on in California. California might as well be its own country. I mean, they got a whole different set of rules that everybody else doesn't have. And so that dynamic has made it a mess and made it almost hard for the Pac-12 to make a decision to come back earlier.
What do you expect out of U of A this year?
Well, you know, because my son's playing, I usually kind of stay away from – and a lot of those upperclassmen, the seniors, are all my kids. So I think they still have some talent and some upper-class talent. But there's a lot of questions. And missing spring practice, missing the fall or summer workouts, I think makes an impact on a lot of them, especially U of A, where, you know, they've got to be – I don't want to say perfect, but they can't have injuries. They got to have guys play at a high level. And, you know, the league's going to be – the few games they have, they're going to play a pretty good competition. But I, you know, let me make – I love U of A. I've got a lot to say about how it ended. Yeah. And I still get upset about that. But it's a great school. Not a good school, but a great school. It's not in a great location from a recruiting standpoint, because you're not going through Tucson on the way to somewhere else. But there's not a better place to live than Tucson. We still have our house. They're still living there. So we love the city. It's just out of the way a little bit from a recruiting standpoint.
When you look at the South this year, Rich, what do you see out of the South? And is it a USC? Is it an Arizona State? Is Utah just simply reloading and retooling?
I think Utah is always going to be there because of what Kyle has built. You know, they're going to play hard. They're going to have good players. And particularly at home, they're going to be a tough out. I think Arizona State's done a nice job. They've got a lot of players coming back, from what I understand. USC's got to be considered the front runner because of the talent they got coming back. But I think, again, nobody's really practiced. California teams are probably at a little bit of disadvantage because they've done nothing mm-hmm. from a group standpoint. I know, buddy, you and our buddy Charlie Rago at Cal said they haven't done anything until just recently, even being in the own building. So they're going to be behind a little bit early when they finally get their season started.
Last question for you, and that is, this may lead right into your rant. Have we seen enough now on how this all went down with college football? We understand COVID has turned everything upside down. But to have a singular leader in college football, to have a commissioner in college football, are we at that point so we don't have one conference here, one conference there, doing this, doing that? I understand what you're saying about California and other parts of the country. I get that. But it just feels so much like we have to have somebody lead this, like you. Somebody, anybody, have some leadership.
There is, and I think the bigger issue coming up with the NCAA is the NIL, name, image, and likeness, and basically they're going to professionalize players. And I don't think the NCAA wants to get into that, but the NCAA's got to make a determination, the difference between Power 5 schools and the smaller schools, and certainly between that and 1AA and lower divisions. The problem is, and I was a president of AFCA, the Coach Association, a couple yep. years ago. It was shocking to me trying to get some rules passed or legislation passed. There was about 20 people on a committee that voted on rules and legislation for Division I football, and only one person on that committee was actually from a Division I football school. There were Division III schools, a volleyball coach, this and that. And they're making decisions on what we're going to have as Division I football. It was ridiculous. And so that it's too large, too unyieldy. You would need a commissioner. It's going to be a mess. I think they should simplify it right now by having no signing date. You got 85 scholarships. If two sides sign, they agree to it. If a player wants to go pro after 1 year, go pro. If he wants to go pro after 2 years, go pro. Why do we make him go 3 years? Mm. Could you see kids opting out after a year, 2 years, whatever? Well, just let them go pro. And you know what? A buddy told me, he says, well, let the NFL draft them like they do in baseball. And if a kid doesn't want to like his draft status, then don't go in a draft. Let the NFL do it. So there's some easier solutions to what we're doing. And I think the NCAA's got to take a hard look at it right away.
You're not done coaching, right?
Well, I don't hope not.
This podcast could blow up, right?
I think it's been a lot of fun joining the dark side like Brad is here. I've had 20 some years of head coaching experience and 30 years overall. But I say that, I always tell young coaches, if you've got 15 years of experience, but all you did was the same thing every year, you just got 1 year repeated 15 times. I like to think my 30-some years, I learned a lot every year, and I have. I've learned. I like to think I'm a whole lot smarter and be a lot better now than I was a year ago or 10 years ago. And if I get another shot at it, I have a great plan, and I got a really, really good staff, I think, ready to go. But if not, we'll join the media world.
All right. Well, look, this was fun, and I'm glad that you're doing this. I'm glad that you are doing this because you've got this in you. I can only imagine if you get Mike Leach on this podcast or some of the people that you know, just forget it. It's going to be sit back and just do this.
Well, the Fighting Pirate was going to come on. I've already got a call from one of my former players, Pat McAfee. Pat, is blown up.
Yep.
Pat said he's ready to go, and so there's a lot of coaches, unfortunately or fortunately, that are retired now, that are my age, that are like, Coach, just give us a shout. So it'll be fun.
Stay well. Appreciate the time and the insight, Rich. Thanks.
Keep in touch, Brad. Appreciate you.
There's Rich Rodriguez with us. And again, it is the Hard Edge Football Podcast with his daughter. This is great. Either just launching it, make sure you check it out. And we're back with more after this timeout.